Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, we'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined in the dugout from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
No Chris Zook. I'll keep an eye on the bullpen phone in case he calls in. But for now, we are going to get right down to it. I feel like this is a topic near and dear to your heart, Brian. I don't know if you've seen the stuff around the Major League Baseball's proposal to the Players Association and the latest, let's say, half-hearted offer that the Major League have offered.
But I can only assume it's super draconian.
It's not draconian in such as, like, because I take draconian to like to suggest either like, you know, like backwards or like outdated. This is like newfangled. It's like creative math or something. Like they're finding a different way to make things tough for players, which, I mean, not surprising.
Lay it on me.
It's Major League Baseball. And this is described, Joel Sherman of the New York Post started with reporting of the league's proposal to radically alter service time structure and collective bargaining.
The Great. Proposal Good start.
Would make players eligible for free agency at 29 and a half years of age. It would also involve a $1 billion pool, which would be tied to revenues in future seasons that would be dispersed in an unspecified manner to replace current arbitration system. So changing not only free agency eligibility, but also changing the arbitration system. I want to tackle the first side of this first, the age thing. So it does, you know, prevent the teams messing around with when they call up rookies as it exists, right? I mean, this is the Chris Bryant thing, right? Like that the Major League Baseball Players Association has used as a test case, right? That, you know, clearly when the Cubs pushed back his delayed his promotion in 2015, they pushed back his free agency till this coming winter. And so they filed a service time grievance on his behalf, MLBPA. However, he would have reached free agency at the same time.
Yeah. I think this is bad. I mean, they looked at the NHL's model and was like, we want some of that, but worse. Because I think in the NHL, you become a free agent when you're 27, right? And if you take a look at the way that Major League Baseball teams pay guys who are 30 or close to 30, it's not good.
Right.
So pushing this all the way back to 29 is a non-starter. I think that that's a starting point for them, and they're going to want the players to bargain them down. And
Oh, so you think they're coming in at 29 and a half with the expectation that like it'll be the age could get chiseled down?
I think so, right? Because the players aren't going to stand for that. They're going to look at that. And especially because there are more and more young superstars coming into the league, right? Guys like Vlad aren't going to go into this CBA and be like, you know what would be, or Juan Soto too, right? Like he's the big case. You know, they're not going to look at this and be like, okay, so I started when I was 19, right? 6 years from that means that I'm going to become a free agent at 25 and get a massive payday. They're not going to want to look at that in a collective bargaining agreement and be like, you know what's good? You know what's the smart thing to do in this particular instance? I'm going to lengthen the amount of time until I get paid. That's not happening. It's a non-starter. Right,
and to an age at which I won't get paid as much.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not happening. Not happening.
Yeah, so the 6 year service time, it really does impact. And as I was reading MLBTradeRumors.com's kind of like synopsis of all the reporting, you know, they point out the sports brightest talents right now are reaching the bigs in their early 20s in spite of the existing service time structure. And so they do reach free agency before 29. And in fact, they said, mm-hmm. you know, three of the top four players on the most recent free agent power rankings, Carlos Correa, Corey Seager, and Trevor Story wouldn't be eligible for free agency this offseason if it were only granted at 29 and a half years of age. Right? Like they've already reached free agency under the existing structure and it would get pushed back in this case. And particularly because it's the younger players that are these superstars, their new deals at the age of free agency resets the market for everyone.
Correct. Yeah.
So this would either forestall that or like push them into the age at which they just wouldn't get those kind of deals.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's a non-starter for the Players Association, who are the strongest union in professional sports. Right. So I have an incredibly hard time seeing how they would accept something like that. It's just them looking at the way that the NHL handles free agency and being like, hey, we want that, but we want it like better for us, like even better for us than how wage suppressive hockey free agency is. Yeah, I mean, it's never going to happen. So it's not something we need to, you know, that's their proposal. Well, it's not going to happen. Those guys aren't, we might end up seeing a wage thing, but I think the players are going to strive really hard to completely change how free agency works. I hope they're successful. I'm not sure they will be, but I don't think the 29, I don't see that going through. It's an awful proposal. It's worse, I think, completely worse than what we have now. Because you're going to see exactly that, right? You guys are going to, you're going to see players basically get kept by teams until they're 29. And then by the time they hit free agency at 29, then they're not going to be like, the front offices are going to be like, okay, you're on the downslope. Bye. We're not going to pay you. It's awful. And it's pretty freaking transparent. at least that's one thing you can count on the MLB ownership from doing. They're always transparently awful.
Right. Yeah. They don't disguise it in any way. Right. Like there's no sort of obfuscation about this. So the other half of it is the arbitration pool. So the Sherman piece estimated that arbitration eligible players made approximately $650 million this past offseason. Now, granted, this was a unusual offseason coming off of the shortened season last year from COVID and a lot of uncertainty around this season that we're now entering. And so like we didn't have kind of what you'd call like a normal off season. However, the arbitration eligible players, so the $1 billion would be a significant increase to the $650 million. But it may be viewed by the MLBPA as too closely resembling the salary cap, which is something the union has always rejected out of hand. Understandably, right? I mean, that's there's no cap on the revenues for
salary cap is just wage suppression.
But there is some point made within the not just the Sherman piece, but just in sort of the overall reporting this, that the ways in which the arbitrators measure comparable players has relied upon traditional statistics, and that front offices don't necessarily rely on those statistics anymore, right? Like, you know, pitcher wins being one of those.
Yep.
Which kind of like beggars the question, why not give the arbitrators the ability to measure things differently, to give them some of those analytics and to give them the opportunity to.
Well, the thing is, this
arbitration players with different tools,
closed doors, right? They've been closed doors. So, I mean, there's a chance that they do that players that, you know, when the players and the agents are arguing for why they should get paid more, right? Cause like, traditionally, we know that arbitrators have rewarded saves, RBIs, wins, you know, and those are
homers.
Yeah. I mean, homers make sense, but I mean, you know, saves and wins are pretty easily manipulated.
Right.
You know, if a guy's coming up on arbitration and he's having a heck of a year, you know, it's pretty
easy. He can
easy.
Be moved to a non-save situation.
Exactly. Or a starter can, you know,
be pulled before he would qualify for the win.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And or in situations where like a win wasn't possible, and it's easily manipulated. I do think that they should be using more advanced statistics, you know, those should be more available to them. And especially the quote unquote plus statistics, right? Like the ones that focus on average, WRC plus, OPS plus, ERA plus, XFIP, stuff like that, or like XFIP plus Sierra. Like they should focus on those kinds of stats, because those, while not perfect, certainly paint a better picture, and certainly paint a picture that is much closer to like how they are in comparison to similar or the players or the rest of their competition. And therefore, like, that's what arbitration is, right? Like it should be pretty simple. You are, according to like OPS plus and WRC plus, an above average hitter by this amount. The average hitter player gets paid this amount. Therefore, you should get paid exactly this percentage more. That seems like a really simple thing to do.
Right. And that does like the fact that the players are being analyzed in a certain way, using that analysis, right?
Exactly.
You know, if you're considering their value in a like value to a team based on a certain set of metrics, that should be the same set of metrics then that is to determine their value in a monetary sense. Yeah.
Yes. 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 Absolutely.
So that's, you know, I really think, like, clearly, like the amount of the like arbitration, I think, is kind of secondary to the adjudication of value. And so, like, whether MLB proposes any specific amount, I think, is kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Right? Yeah, like, I mean, the owners are going to do everything.
They're essentially saying, like, here's the value of all of the like arbitration eligible players by saying, here's this pool.
Yes.
Whereas, like, you know, if the arbitrator looks at the like raw numbers and is like, well, actually, these arbitration eligible players are worth 85% above X value, and that turns out to be more than what the pool has been set aside, then MLB is like, limited it in a like they put their thumb on the scale
completely artificially. So yeah, I mean, we have seen and we will continue to see stuff like this from the MLB owners. They are, a lot of them are not owners who care about baseball. A lot of them are owners who are looking to use baseball as some sort of investment firm, right? Or real estate company in the case of the Ricketts, or the Oakland Athletics ownership. And so, you know, they're going to do everything in their power to try and suppress wages, because that devalues their quote unquote investment. Right.
Mm-hmm. One thing we didn't talk, maybe you and Zook talked about while I was on holidays, was the salary floor proposal.
We actually haven't talked about that.
So this was Evan Drellich and Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic in mid August. So the league had suggested the MLBPA that there would be a lowering of the luxury tax threshold of like the first, right? Because there's the escalator, 180 million for the first luxury tax threshold, but the institution of $100 million salary floor. Players Association, not really big on any, like they want higher tax thresholds, to be quite honest, is one of the things that they're expected to push for with the CBA to ensure that like the teams that are not trying have to try, right?
That, like, yeah. And I think that's the intention, right? But the problem is that like the owners will not allow a salary floor without a salary cap. And I don't think I wouldn't want that, because all a salary cap is and has proven to be over the course of sports history is just more artificial salary suppression. These owners are not losing money. They're not.
No.
They are not losing money.
No, and you're looking at, I mean, particularly when you talk on like the sports gambling side of things.
Oh, and yeah. And I mean, like the valuation of the teams.
MLB too, right? Looking to like get into bed with Barstool Sports and stuff that like,
ugh.
They are clearly chasing casino dollars and sports gambling. And there are like multiple revenue streams that are not being counted when it comes to calculating, like, and yeah, you said the valuation of these teams, you know, media rights, all those kinds of things, they're doing well.
If these teams were truly not making money and were a black hole and a money pit, then billionaires would not be lining up by the dozens to buy sports teams in the billions of dollars, billions of dollars every single time one of these franchises comes to market. There's a reason for it. And it's not because these guys love baseball, because let me tell you, most of them probably don't.
No.
It's because these franchises make money hand over fist and their valuations grow by multitudes every single year. And, you know, it's even if they are, which they aren't, spoiler alert, even if they lie to you and tell you that they're losing money in certain quarters or across certain seasons, they're really not, because the brand value keeps going up, right? So like if you are losing money holding on to something, but at the end of the day you can sell it and make more than your percentage points back on selling the thing, then you're not really technically losing money, because then you can go ahead and leverage it with the bank and get all that extra money back. So like you're not, which they aren't, by the way, spoilers, not losing money year over year. They are disgustingly rich and have great ways of hiding it. Fantastical ways of hiding it. So like these guys are, there's a reason for it, right? Exactly. And as I said, like they're lining up for it because they know it's worth silly money.
Constantly looking for new ways, you know, like we've talked about the Ricketts and the developments around Wrigley Field, yep. Right? That they're, like you said, they're a real estate company.
Yeah, exactly. So these people do not lose money. They do not lose money. And they are looking for every single possible way to screw players out of their hard-earned money. The owners, is there some sort of risk that comes with owning a baseball team? Sure, I'm not going to deny that. But there's risk with owning anything, and I don't think you should be greatly rewarded for not really doing a whole heck of a lot, except, you know, just sitting on a growing money pile. Players are the ones, you know, short careers that are the actual entertainment product. Without the league, like, we don't cheer for laundry. We sometimes cheer for laundry, but it's the players in those laundry that really make the experience, right?
I definitely cheer against laundry.
Yes. Yeah, I guess that's fair. But, and that's because of the owners, right? I cheer against ownership a lot of the time. Poor, awful ownership I cheer against because they're being bad. But, like, I cheer for players mostly, right? Like, I love the Blue Jays, don't get me wrong, but, like, I love the Blue Jays because the players who play for the Blue Jays are fun and exciting. And, you know, when those players leave, I'll still cheer for those players because they're exciting. And if the players weren't good, or if the players decided that they wanted to start up their own league that was more, you know, crowdfunded or whatever the heck, I would cheer for that because I don't care what the heck the Ricketts do. They're not the reason why I'm watching baseball. I don't go to the Goldeyes games because I like Sam Cates.
No, understandably. Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. Do we want to turn our attention to some on-field action?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that.
I know we do like to rail against the league as a whole and you know, the owners as a body, but we do love the game, or at least the games. Plural. So I was reading a piece earlier today. We're of course recording this on Thursday night. This airs on Friday mornings, but Matt Kelly on MLB.com with a strength of schedule piece, looking at the toughest schedules down the stretch. Now, I know we've talked about specific teams, like a couple teams that we were, you know, discussing their odds for the playoffs and how things looked as they closed the stretch. No, not just your Blue Jays, but a few other squads. But they've gone and kind of broken down, because we're about 4 weeks left in the regular season here. Of course, it's September now. So they went through strength of schedule and postseason odds as a result of this and identified the teams with the biggest uphill climbs, and then the ones with kind of the, you know, obviously as you go down the list, it gets a little easier. So the Padres have the toughest remaining schedule.
Well, I think they play a lot of games against the Dodgers and Giants, right?
This is it. They've got the Astros this weekend. And then they have three more series with the Giants and two more with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and they've been deciding that they're really, really terrible before that. And it's really, really disappointing. I think we're going to unfortunately see a Dodgers, Reds. We're going to see it. I think we're going to see a Dodgers, Reds wild card game.
Wild card. Yeah, it's a tough road for them. Next most on the list of the schedules, St. Louis. They're in the hunt for the NL wild card, but their next 2 weeks include series against the Brewers, series against the Dodgers, including it's a four-game series, a series against the Reds, and they'll face the Brewers again. And then the only sort of soft one in there is the Mets.
That's a big yikes,
right? Like it's a tough one for them. So the Rays, I mean, they do say like their postseason odds are almost 100%. They give them a 99.9%, but they do point out that, you know, two series with the Jays and one apiece with the Red Sox and the Yankees, and then the end of September they close with the Astros. I mean, this is how it works, right? Like if you're in a battle within your division, this is when it kind of comes down to it, because you face those same teams again to kind of close out the season. Yep. I mean, the Rays, I don't necessarily see them slipping from atop the AL East over the course of this. Like, I mean, they're tough games. I you know, they're playing solid teams.
I don't know, man. The Yankees have been really good lately.
This is the thing. The Yankees have kind of turned it on. Giants at number four.
Oh, so they might end up losing the division to the Dodgers.
And that's the thing. So they did, after, you know, being atop the division for quite a while, they went on a four-game losing streak. Dodgers overtook them. However, the Giants, with a win on Thursday, did bring it back to neck and neck with the Dodgers. But they play in the Bay this weekend.
That's going to be really interesting. That's probably going to be the series I'm going to try and watch this weekend.
And so, as we mentioned, they do, of course, have two series against the Padres and one against Atlanta over the next patch as well. So,
Padres have been real bad, and I don't trust Atlanta. I don't know. I probably should trust Atlanta, but I don't trust Atlanta.
They're duking it out with Chicago, or with Colorado as we talk right now. So, TBD on Atlanta. But I mean, the Padres, I mean, this is the thing. Those are games they're going to have to win. So they're going to be motivated when they're playing the Giants. But I mean, yeah, I do. The postseason odds for the Giants are listed at 100%. It's just that this next stretch is going to be tough, and it will dictate whether they're in a wild card or if they win the NL West, which would be, I mean, that would be great. I kind of think, like, after everyone kind of like just not including them in the preseason, right? Like, it was basically everyone expected San Diego and Los Angeles to be duking it out, with Los Angeles likely to take the top spot. And then for San Francisco to come in and be like, oh yeah, you know what? We'll take the mic. Thanks. But yeah, no, that one, they're assured of a playoff spot, it seems like. But whether that's a one gamer or a series, you know, TBD. The Mariners have the most remote postseason odds on the list and a tough road ahead. However, they will play against their AL wildcard competitors in the Red Sox and Oakland Athletics, with two series against the Athletics, actually, to
basically really close out September. Man. Not to make it, just to play a spoiler enough.
Right. And they've, it's a surprisingly like exciting young team, right? Like, this is kind of a rebuild that they're,
you can see them at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're kind of a little early for what they were anticipated to be. And you can kind of see where they're headed with this young team and an exciting bunch of kids. And, you know, like, they're above 500, which I got to say, I was a little surprised by, like, like this late in the season.
They're a fun team, man. They're fun to watch. I love watching the Mariners play. They have a good broadcast. I like Root. They're better than like the Bally Sports broadcasts, and their commentators are good. And the team is, team's been fun this year. I have been enjoying the Mariners. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they are still, they need help in some places. But overall, I think they're a fun team, and they're going to be fun next year too. They go out and spend the money in the right places. Their guys get better and older. They get Kyle Lewis back healthy. Mariners could be fun next year.
Yeah, I was reading a piece, I think it was on MLB Trade Rumors, about kind of what the offseason looks like for the Mariners. And apparently, so Jerry Dipoto, president of baseball operations, was on MLB Network Radio earlier this week and said, quote, "We'll be more active in free agency than we have in past years."
God bless you, Jerry.
You know, he was pointing to the franchise's ample long-term payroll space, as well as the club's ability to start target more specific areas of need now that they've had certain players emerge as internal building blocks. So, you know, it could be a very exciting offseason if you're a Seattle fan, and if you're a Jerry DePoto fan, who's always an interesting front office guy. I've always found him.
He's so much fun. Oh my goodness. Cause he's just like, he plays fantasy baseball in real life. It's amazing. It's freaking amazing.
He really does. Yeah. He definitely does not come at it the same way most do in front offices. Right behind the Mariners are the Athletics on the strength of schedule. They have two series against Houston. You know, unlikely to unseat Houston atop the AL West, but you know, when you get six games against them, there's two chances at that. As mentioned, they play the Mariners in two series. So again, mostly in division. Your Blue
Who's
Jays.
Who's got the easiest?
So the easiest amongst the list. Let me just scroll down here. So they've got the Reds.
The Reds is the easiest? Okay, so that's fun. Congratulations to the Reds for making the playoffs.
The Reds, they're 19 games against the Tigers, the Cubs, the Pirates, and the Nationals.
Oh, man. Wouldn't it be something if the Reds got in the playoffs and Luis Castillo just goes out there and shuts the Dodgers down? And, you know, at the start of the season, we're all saying, hey, guess what? Get ready for the World Series, which should like the actual quote unquote World Series, which would be whatever the series happens between the Dodgers and the Padres. And then both of them never make like the actual playoffs proper. That'd be hilarious. I'm team chaos at this point. I've already put a fork in my Jays. They're done.
Yeah, they're right in the middle. They're tied at 7 on strength of schedule. But yeah,
5 games back, they're done. It's over.
It's a tough one for them.
Right
behind the Reds. And I mean, like, I'm in favor just for Joey Votto too, right? Getting some Joey Votto in the postseason. Love that guy.
And with the Reds, we don't have to cheer for he who must not be named anymore either.
This is true. Phillies actually right behind the Reds in terms of easiest schedules. So they've got a 3-game series this weekend with Miami. Then they've got the Rockies, the Cubs, Orioles, and Pirates amongst their remaining.
That's cake. That's pretty easy.
So they close out against Atlanta. So they may well be within a few games of Atlanta at that point. And so, you know, chance for them to, you know, play spoiler at some point. White Sox actually third on the list of easiest schedules.
That team is so good at baseball, man. They're scary.
They're pretty much have sewn up the AL Central, so it'll be probably giving players rest over the next month, but even then they could overtake the Rays for the number one seed in the AL because their next month is pretty soft, right?
And the thing is, right, is do you
say because they play the Twins multiple times? Do you want to be the AL?
The AL's tough, right? The AL's tough, right? Because like, what are your options? You get to play against the Rays, who are good, the wild card team, which is, let's be honest, probably going to be the freaking Yankees, and they're good at baseball, or the Houston Astros, who are also surprisingly really good. So like. Yeah, or the White Sox, who are also incredible. So it's like, goodness me, the AL is just a bloodbath.
I mean, I guess the only, like, if you're the number one seed, then obviously like home.
Yeah, home field's big.
Home field, and I mean, not that I'd have to pull up their home and away splits, but I mean, Chicago has done very well at both, but. Let me just find them in the standings here, the home and away splits.
I think that they've got a really good swing.
So 46 wins at home, 30, they're 500 away. So they're 46 and 24 home. So the, I mean, yeah, you'd want home and home field advantage, right? I mean, it's not like, so like Tampa Bay, I don't know if you've looked at their home and away.
Yeah, they are just as good away as they are at home. They're assassins, dude. They're remarkable. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It's like, it's almost even between home and away. I mean, especially because obviously like they play in a mediocre ballpark that has very few
Yankees
fans,
are pretty similar,
so they're able to
home
do it
and away
anywhere.
As well. The Red Sox are much better home than they are away. The Jays are much better home than they are away. The White Sox are really, really want that home field advantage. The Astros, unsurprisingly, much better at home than they are away.
Seattle actually also better at home than away.
The Braves better away than they are home. That's weird. The Phillies are awful away. The Brew Crew are better away than they are at home. The Reds are just about even. The Dodgers are much better at home.
San Francisco
Giants
is basically
about even.
Yeah,
that's crazy too. And then the Padres are abysmal away. That's interesting. What secret tech are the Astros using?
Yeah, I mean, I guess once they got rid of all the garbage cans, they had to figure out something new. So,
just can't trust, man. I just can't trust.
Well, just looking at the time, we are going to have to wrap things up, but I will do the Chris Zook thing and ask you what's on the pity party today.
Oh, man. So it should be actually a pretty decent pity party. There's a whole bunch of really good new stuff out. A new Japanese band called Kojika. I've got some stuff from there and them in there. Two other bands, Lightspeed Highway, Midwest Yacht Club. A brand new track from a band called Dusty Cubby, which is pretty decent. I'm going to play some acoustic stuff in the middle. A brand new Pet Symmetry, which is also fun. And a brand new track from a single from Golfer, a Montreal-based math rock band, who I've actually had on to interview on the Pity Party before. They're really, really good. And huge in Japan, actually, which is weird. They go on a Japanese tour like once a year. They're really, really freaking fantastic. And they're good CanCon stuff from Montreal. They're awesome.
All right. So that's coming up at 1 o'clock. Folks can, of course, keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM in the interim. We will not say what Chris
says. Thank you.
We will play just ball. Say, follow us on at the Bench Jockeys, and we will see you next week.
Strike three, you're out.